Welcome to show number 73 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by SportsCardRadio.com. What is going on, everybody? Hopefully everybody's having a good day. Good start of the springtime into summertime almost. We had a day in California like last week that was like upper 80s. Felt like the summertime. We're back down into the 70s. That's got to be, I don't know if there's snow in the U.S. or I'm sure there's cold weather somewhere around the U.S. and wherever you're listening. I know we have listeners in Canada and all over the place. So hopefully where you are, it's as pristine as conditions we have here. A little breezy out here in California, but that only bothers you if you're out there playing golf. I was out playing golf yesterday. It was a lot of fun. Golf's one of those games I encourage anybody. I always try to get all my friends and everybody to try to play golf, and just it doesn't matter how seriously you take it. It's a challenging game. I think everybody that goes out, they enjoy it. But I think there's always that realization that in order to get really good, you have to spend a lot of time out there, and you do have to practice a lot. So I've been practicing now that the weather's nice. I've been practicing a little bit more, so it's a little more rewarding when you go out and play, but it's also one of those things, like the more you practice, the more you want to get better, and so the more you've got to practice. It's kind of like collecting cards, I think. The more cards you get, the more you want, the more you want to keep collecting them and keep getting better ones and maybe keep getting the same ones you've got because you have that much faith in the card or the guy or whatever. You love the team that much or you want to build up that big of a collection. So it's kind of the same thing. Those kind of things go hand in hand. So I've actually been buying quite a few cards. I'd say quite a few. I would say about maybe five or six. Outside the challenge, I've been buying, I bought a Jordan Crawford autograph rookie. I actually won. I haven't done a show in a couple weeks, mainly because I was seriously trying. I was relaxing from coming back from the Las Vegas industry summit, but quite honestly, I was trying to win this fantasy basketball title because I've been talking about how I was going to win this title, I think, since like January or whenever. I don't know. I've been in the lead for a long time. I've been in the lead, I think, since December. So we'll see what happens going forward next year. But this year, I am a champion. I won the fantasy basketball, so I've got that off my schedule. That's also freed up a little bit more time for golf and things like that. So as I've discovered, as fantasy basketball kind of takes up a large part of the afternoon and evening for me. But now that that's over, I'm glad. I'll probably catch a couple of the playoff games and things like that. But to celebrate, I was thinking, hey, this is my first. I've been playing fantasy sports for 7 years, since 2004. So if you could believe it or not, I've never won a championship. So I was like, I've got to celebrate somehow. So I went out, and I didn't go out. I got online and bought a Jordan Crawford Panini Classics autograph card that just came out. Panini Classics. We did a box break of Absolute this last week, and that was really cool. We pulled a thanks to Panini America. We pulled a Carmelo Anthony jersey, like numbered out of 10. It was a prime jersey, a little stripe down the middle. It was a really cool looking jersey card, and it was numbered 10 out of 10, I think. So really nice card. But Panini Classics came out this week, and I was debating on whether or not to buy Jordan Crawford's Contenders autograph, but I decided to go with the Classics. Even though it was a redemption, I was like, whatever. I'm pretty sure the guy's got some free time now that the Wizards are bounced out of the playoffs. So I got his, and I think that's on card too. I like the Contenders too because it's like a window, and Jordan Crawford isn't like in every set, I don't think. He might be, but I didn't see him. Yeah, I think he is in every set, but I tend to like the on card signatures, or the cut window ones are really cool. I thought the autographs looked really nice on those. And the patch below was pretty neat as well. So got a Jordan Crawford. That was outside our contest. Inside the contest where I'm trying to beat my brother, and I've been doing pretty good lately. I've been making some good sales, and if things keep going well, I'll keep making some, not some huge sales, but some little sales. But I picked up on eBay a Ben Revere autograph. He's a batter for the Minnesota Twins. I think he plays in the outfield, and I believe he's in AAA, and he's doing okay. AAA is obviously, it's tough to tear it up. But I also got a Yasmani Grandal. He's like one of the top, I think the Reds have two top pitching or catching prospects. He's a catcher, and they have two of them, and this is one of them, so I'm kind of rolling the dice. Usually when an organization has two in the same position, one of them is probably going to have to change positions or going to have to be a DA. No, the Reds actually play in the National League, so he couldn't be a DH, or he needs to get traded. So one of either position change or get traded. So I'm seeing what happens there. He's off to a decent start this year. I picked up his Bowman Sterling autograph from 2010, so that was exciting. It's always fun getting the card. I haven't like bought cards and like got them to like keep outside. Like I've got a lot of fan forum members that have sent me things over the past 2 years or so, 2 or 3 years. So that's been really cool. But like physically buying the cards myself was and getting them and like something you actually picked out and you bought and you committed money to and bids and time and all that stuff and waited and checked the mail for like 2 or 3 days in a row waiting to get it. It is kind of fun. And the Jordan Crawford, I actually got a deal on. I paid $15 for it, which might be overpaying. I think they might sell for a little less. They probably in the off season, I can imagine they'll sell for around $10. But I had a Groupon. I started using Groupon. My mom or something told me about Groupon. There was like a sale on there for a restaurant in town that I always eat at. So I was like, that sounds like it was like 50% off or whatever. So I got on there and I got that. And then a couple days later, I saw on Twitter people talking about the eBay Groupon, which was pay $7 and you got a $15 eBay deal. So eBay gift certificate or whatever. So it worked out perfectly. I ended up paying like a dollar more or whatever for the Jordan Crawford. So ended up paying about $8 for it is what it ended up being with the half off coupon that I got. So that was pretty cool. Keep your eye out for those kind of things. I don't know if eBay will do it again. I saw that a lot of people bought it. So I doubt they can just give away, 50% off every week or whatever, but you might see more things like that, especially like between Amazon and eBay. Like those two companies really compete against each other, so you might see an Amazon coupon floating around if you don't already. So there's always interesting things to be found on both of those websites, I think. Not necessarily cards. There's all kinds of crazy stuff on those websites. Amazon has more. I was actually flying on the plane with somebody that worked for Amazon, and it's a really interesting company. They like store a lot of the goods themselves, kind of like check out my cards in a sense. So it's an interesting company. But anyways, that's what I've been up to. Been playing golf, won the fantasy basketball title I so desperately wanted to win. I've been working quite a bit on the site, but working to pay bills and things like that, and so that's been taking up a tremendous amount of my time as well. But also what I've been able to do is minor league baseball start. Baseball season has obviously started, and I could go in depth on the Giants, I guess, but I'll leave that till later in the season because I don't think they started out very well last year and it turned out well. So baseball season's kind of one of those things. You just kind of follow it, maybe not analyze it too much, although I'm in a couple fantasy baseball leagues and I'm getting crushed kind of because I don't really know. I don't understand all the fantasy baseball, how I don't understand all the players. I don't know all the players. I guess that's a better way to say it. So it's very tough for me. The NBA was much easier because there's only about, I don't know, what, 30 teams or some odd, and there's only about 6 or 7 guys on each team that play. Whereas in baseball, you've got all these 6 or 7 different pitchers alone, probably more than that, and you've got all these different batters on all these different teams, and there's different ballparks, and there's different pitching matchups, and it's a tough game. So I'm hopefully going to get a little more focused on that now that basketball's over and I'm kind of over winning and I'm ready to win maybe one of these baseball ones I'm in. So we'll see what happens. I know a couple of our fan forum members are in there and they're probably much better, much more knowledgeable about baseball than I am. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if I can't just scratch up and maybe, it took me 7 years to win a basketball title because I started, I think, with basketball. So it's one of those things. I've only played baseball maybe 1 or 2 years. So it's maybe I need to like keep getting into it, get to know the players, get to know how the scoring system works. I've been in the same scoring system for basketball for the last 3 or 4 years. And I think the more you're in the same scoring system, the more you know, especially on draft day, who to get and things like that. But anyways, I've been catching a couple Stockton Ports game. They're the single A affiliate for the Oakland A's. And they have 2 top draft picks, Michael Choice, who's a center fielder. I think they drafted him with the 10th or 11th pick in last year's draft. And then Max Stassi, who I believe was a high school draft pick, but I think he was picked in the 3rd or 4th round. And they paid him decent money. He's a catcher. And they're both interesting prospects. Michael Choice, I've seen, he's hit a couple home runs. I've seen him hit a single for an RBI in a game. Max Stassi, I haven't seen do very well in any of the games that I've been to, but he has gotten a couple hits and have done pretty well. So we'll be following those two guys along with anybody else of note that comes through. Yasmani Grandal, the catcher I was talking about with the A's, or no, with the Reds, excuse me, is coming in. I think he plays for like the Bakersfield Blaze or something like that, and they do play the Ports, I think, at the end of this month. So I'll probably be able to check out him, get a like an in-person. We're throwing all that up actually on our website, sportscardradio.com. I'll have a little icon on the homepage, but I haven't put it up yet. But if you look on the left-hand side, where the little menu links are, on the, near the bottom will be Prospect Blog. And you click on that, and we have two things on Michael Choice. We've got something on Max Stassi. And Rashawn Dixon, also an outfielder for the A's, he's a big guy. And he's not, I don't think his cards are very expensive. So he's somebody to look at as well. I think my brother, full disclosure, I think my brother might have one of his for the challenge. So don't play too much. Or don't bid on his one on check out my cards. I'm just kidding. But we'll be following the Ports, throwing up some prospects. If there's anybody in the California League that basically plays the Stockton Ports that you have cards of or that you have any interest of, let us know. We can try to snap some photos. My digital camera that I bought for Christmas really turned out to be, it was a really horrible camera. I just bought it online. I thought, because I've had Kodaks before, and it was triple the megapixels of the one I had, but I don't know. It doesn't have a lithium ion battery. I guess I should have looked into the purchase a little bit more. So if you try to shoot in the highest quality on that, the battery runs out extremely quickly. So either that, or you need to have like a fanny pack full of AA batteries or whatever. Maybe I need to get like the super platinum ones instead of going to the 99-cent store and getting batteries. But we'll see. I'll get better pictures. I do have some good pictures up of Max Stassi and Michael Choice and those guys. Some really nice pictures. So if you want those, for whatever, if you want to send these guys TTM, I know we got them on baseballs and we gave those away on the fan forum. My brother went to the little fan day, and I guess people were there getting these guys to sign all kinds of stuff. Probably some of it's on eBay right now. But they sign all the time before the game. My brother always has went early both times. And I mean, you can walk right down to the front row. I mean, we were sitting in the you can buy front row tickets for like $5-$10. So it's really cool. It's a really new ballpark too. The ballpark's not that old, so it's really nice experience. The food's good there. It's not too expensive, but I guess it could be cheaper. So, but we'll be bringing you lots of coverage from prospects in the Stockton Ports, and it's been fun going to baseball games. I've almost been hit. I haven't bought a baseball glove. I've moved so many times. I used to have a baseball glove. I think my brother might have one somewhere, but I don't have a baseball glove really anywhere around this house that I'm living or this apartment I'm living in right now. So I've never had the opportunity to catch a ball at a game, but it seems like now that I don't, and that's always when I've brought a glove, and now that I don't have a glove, it seems like the ball is like whizzing by my head every other time at the ballpark. The other day, my friend and I were sitting on we got like front row tickets for $5. So we're sitting in the front row on the third baseline, and a guy hit a pop-up, and it was sky high, and it was kind of windy, and the ball starts blowing back, and I've never really played baseball before competitively or for a long period of time. And so I see this ball, but I know well enough to know this ball is coming down right on top of my head. And it ends up blowing right next to my friend who was sitting to my left. And I just see this ball coming down, and I'm thinking, man, I can't catch this. This is coming down too fast. I can't catch this with my hands. So I kind of take a step. I don't realize what's going on at that point. I take a step to my right, and I look back, and I see my friend kind of ducking out of the way, but then the third baseman for the Stockton Ports is right there, and he makes a great catch along the side and kind of saves us and a couple other people that were sitting there as the baseball was coming down on top of my head. I've never had a feeling like that. Usually I've had a glove at a game. I'm worried that if I had a glove, though, in that situation, I wouldn't have been aware of the third baseman coming over, and I might have tried to, like, he might have had to fight me away for the ball because he made a nice play because we were all kind of ducking out of the way because this ball was coming down really fast. And it's one of those things. I've never experienced before, so it makes me want to go and find the cheapest baseball glove I can find in town at the Play It Again Sports or whatever, and put that on so I can protect myself. And hopefully not in the next time that happens, if that ever happens to me again, I'll hopefully be more aware of the player coming over from third and get an eye on him and make sure I don't interfere, because that would kind of suck. I always see those fans on TV, always see them interfere either with the ball that's fair down the line and they stick their glove out to catch it, or when the guy's coming over, and especially when it's like a big out and there's people like got their glove in front of him, he kind of has to push him out of the way. I don't want to be that fan that like gets booed and everybody like, you know, if I blow the play for the home team. So, well, it'd be another thing if it was the other team. Maybe I'll get in there and break it up for Michael Choice or Max Stassi and get them another pitch to see in a bad. But that about wraps it up for this first segment. I'm not exactly sure how valuable that was for your sports card collections, but these next couple segments hopefully will. I don't know exactly. Obviously, by this first segment, you probably don't even know what we're going to be talking about, and I probably don't either, but I have on my little sheet of paper here, I want to talk about those video cards. My brother blew $70 on a Tony Romo card, so if you really want one of these, my brother's going to be giving it away. I think he bought it just to play around with it for a little bit, and then he's going to be giving away. So we'll talk about these video cards. First from Upper Deck, I heard about them originally at the Summit, and they are just now coming to the market, and Panini also has some planned. So I won't blow my whole content here in the prelim, but we're going to be talking about that. Talk about MAP pricing, or minimum advertised pricing, or whatever that stands for, and what that means. Upper Deck and Panini, I don't know if they both go in the minimum advertised pricing, but they've basically cut down who can sell their products. So we'll talk a little bit about that, not necessarily about the details of that, but what I kind of think it might do for the hobby. So we'll see what happens there. We'll talk a little bit about card stores. There was actually one in my town that opened up, so I'll talk about my experience there. And that's about it. We'll talk about that. And I want to get to the release date calendar. I think April and May, the end of April and May, and even June, a little bit of June too. Some of this stuff might get pushed into June. We got some really good months. This was a really good time last year. We had Bowman last year and all this stuff coming out last year and ended up being really good products. So we want to keep it, as collectors, we want to keep an eye on it. Sometimes things have a way of repeating themselves. Sometimes they don't. So we want to keep an eye on things. And we've got football mixed in and we've got labor talks. We don't even know what's going on there. So it's an exciting time for sports and for sports card collecting. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We haven't done a very traditional show in a while, so maybe we'll get back to that. We're probably switching things up here. The current format might be going by the wayside for now, but we'll have some interviews in the next couple shows. If I can coordinate, I've got like five stacked up, so I should be able to coordinate at least one for the next one. So we'll have those and all kinds of other stuff. Mix it up a little bit. There's so many products coming out, but we'll definitely highlight some of the good ones as we go along as well. But that wraps it up for this first segment. When we come back, we're talking video cards. We're talking some more Summit talk, basically, and kind of the aftermath. We're all kind of seeing the stuff that was talked about then, and not kind of like big changes and stuff, but the slow changes are starting to be put in place, and we'll see what happens when all that gets shaken out in the end, right after this.
Card Collectors World is a forum where you can buy, sell, trade, and discuss sports, non-sports cards, comics, games, toys, and more. Like to win free stuff? Of course you do. We have contests with loads of free prizes, card drafts, group breaks, and more. It is 100% free to join. Come check us out at cardcollectorsworld.com.
And we are back. Time to talk about some evolution in the hobby. These video cards that have come out. And Upper Deck has come out with their versions, which is basically like a book card. And it opens up, and I believe there's like a USB port or something that you can plug into your computer And I think you can plug it into your TV. That's what my brother was saying. We'll find out once we get it. Hopefully this guy ships it out. My brother bought a Tony Romo. I think he bought it mainly, I think he said he knew he overpaid. I think he paid $70 for it. And he knew they probably won't sell for that for very long. But he wanted to be the first. I think if you go and search Upper Deck Evolution completed auctions on eBay, I think he bought the first one. At least that's what he's claiming. So if you go there, they'll buy it now on the Tony Romo for, I think it was like $69.99 or $70, something like that. He was the first one. And I think that was the first video card to ever be sold on eBay. So he's claiming he bought the first one. So we'll get a video of kind of how it works and stuff like that on there, and then we'll raffle it off. Hopefully we don't ding it up too much and we'll raffle it off. And then Panini has their version, which I think they've only released like prototype videos of, because I don't think they have a product that it's in. But it's basically more like an iPad, or not an iPad, but like an iTouch. Something like that, more like kind of like a screen, at least from what I've seen. But they have autographed versions of those. They have like Blake Griffin. They've shown Blake Griffin and like Kobe like autographing those or whatever. So that's kind of interesting, because what I heard at the summit was Chris Carlin from Upper Deck said that they're always looking, Upper Deck and all the companies in general, and this is the truth, they're always looking for that next thing other than autograph and jersey cards that will help sell products. You know, in the 90s, it was like serial number cards like became hot. Even before that, it was like gold foil stamping, like 1992 Fleer Ultra or whatever. It was all about the gold. You could even see on the boxes, that's what they advertise on the front. You know, every card features gold foil stamping. You know, something like that was tight. Or like crazy rookies with like all this crazy foil on it, and it like shimmered in the light, and even refractors in the day. All that was pre-autograph cards and pre-jersey cards, and it really helped sell the products. And then once jersey and autograph cards came out, it was almost like collectors felt like this was the end of it. You know, this was as good as it could get. Obviously, we have different variations of like sticker autographs and cut autographs and patch jerseys and just regular ones and player worn ones and ones that don't even look like the dude ever wore the jersey or whatever. So there's all these kind of different things exist, but the companies themselves are always looking for that next thing, that next gold foil, that next serial number. Really took off in the mid to late 90s, really helped rookie card sales like Vince Carter and even like Donovan McNabb and Dante Culpepper and Ricky Williams in those kind of years. And before that, Peyton Manning rookie cards, SP Authentic, sell for a lot of money. And Tom Brady's SP Authentic rookie sells for a ton of money. And it's not autographed or jersey card. It just has a serial number on it, which was really rare for the day. So all those kind of things, they're always looking to push the envelope. They said that they're thinking maybe, hey, video cards could possibly be it. You know, it could be the new added value to the product minus autograph and jersey. Now, I think, as we all know, the autograph and the jersey, not necessarily the jersey, but really the autograph's got to be added to everything in sports cards these days to really get the collector excited. I think some of these huge jumbo patches, I think, could be used a little bit more. You know, I think we've seen Topps had incredible sales on their All-Star jumbo patches that were game used and stuff like that. And I think other companies have seen similar success, but we just don't see the big jumbo, the huge jumbo patch, maybe for multiple reasons. But I think they definitely need to keep autographs on these video cards to keep them hot and to keep them relevant, because I don't know, unless more things gets done with the video content. And that's kind of my point today, was these video cards, I believe they play a highlight of the player, they play some videos, and they play, I think the Panini ones maybe even show the guy signing the video card or whatever. So that's all pretty interesting. What would be interesting is, it seems like you could plug them in on your computer. I haven't got enough information, but it'd be neat if you could download content then throughout the year or throughout the season or throughout even the guy's career on these video cards, because then it would make me want to keep it instead of pulling it out of a pack and selling it, if you know, to get the highest price, I might want to keep it. Or as a collector, if I pull, you know, a Donovan McNabb or I pull Dwight Howard and I'm not really interested in seeing Dwight's Howard's highlights and videos and things like that, I'll sell that. But I want the Kobe Bryant or I want the Jordan Crawford one. I think that would be kind of interesting if they could get some of their exclusive, like Panini could get some of their exclusive athletes like Blake Griffin, who just recently signed an exclusive deal with them to be a spokesperson and everything like that. And Kobe Bryant, and I think they have Kevin Durant under contract and stuff like that, and they've got all kinds of guys and all these rookies and stuff. If they could get exclusive video from them where they're just like, I know Brandon Jennings is all over Facebook or whatever. This guy's on the web all the time, and some of these guys have Twitter accounts. Get them to upload something just for their video card, too, that goes directly to their fans. I think that would be interesting. I think it would really increase the collectability of them and increase the long-term collectability, because I think that's something that's yet to be solved outside the autograph and jersey card. Yeah, I want to keep a Kobe autograph or a Brett Favre autograph and their jersey cards and stuff like that, because they have value going forward, because those things, there's always a finite amount of those things. It doesn't matter, you know, even if a guy signs all day, every day for the rest of his life, eventually he'll die. So there's, I mean, he might have a lot of signatures at that point, but that's kind of an extreme example. You can kind of get the point. Whereas with just a general run-of-the-mill base card, even if it's serial numbered one of one, you know that the next year the companies are going to create the same printing plate or the same piece of cardboard and stamp one of one on it. It'll just have a different picture and an extra year of stats on it. But if you have a video card that I could constantly plug into my computer and download a new video from Blake Griffin telling me about last night's game or telling me about the first half of the season or telling me about some of the things he's working on, even if it's like a pure sponsor. I went to Blake Griffin's website. He's advertising Subway, he's advertising Power Bar, he's advertising nutritional stuff to, and I think one of his charities is like a, you know, childhood obesity charity, so he's promoting that kind of stuff. I don't care if he's on there kind of like as a self-promoter promoting his sponsor's endorsements and stuff. Maybe they can pay him to do it more often. I just think that would be kind of cool. Anything where it gets you a little bit closer to the player, gets you something that ESPN doesn't even have, gets you something that no website even has up on their site, or even YouTube, and I'm sure people would put it on YouTube, but you would get it first. If you had your little Kobe Bryant card, or if you had your, you know, Brett Favre card, or whoever it was, you could plug it into your computer and download exclusive content. I think that would make these cards, outside of getting the Tony Romo when we get it, play the video, and then that's it. I've seen the, you know, however many minutes of cut video they have of Tony on there. You know, after I watch it, there's only so many times I can watch Tony. I mean, girls might beg to differ me on that point, but, you know, there's only so many highlights I can personally see of Tony Romo. So I think it would be cool, and maybe they do this. Maybe I'm going off on a long tangent right here. Maybe they already do this, or they're planning on doing it. But I think it would be neat if you could download content on them, and you could download, you know, update it. If I could get Blake or Kobe or Kevin Durant to send me a video of just them, like, hanging out in the hotel room or whatever, send me random videos throughout the year that's only found on those video cards, that would be awesome. I think that would add a whole, obviously you probably wouldn't want those ones autographed, so I think that would help in the collectability of them. People, if I have a Kobe Bryant autograph one, I don't want to be handling it every day and plugging it into my computer and worrying about it being on my messy desk. So it would help the companies, you know, put out the ones that are just the video cards. I think it would help open the door to other non-basketball collectors. People could say, you know, there's lots of fans of Kobe that don't collect his cards or probably don't even realize he has valuable sports cards. But if you showed him one of these video things and say, hey, here's Kobe talking about the game last night, and, you know, you can't even see this on ESPN. It's only if you have one of these cards. Or here he is, you know, talking about his workout he just did at the gym. That's pretty powerful stuff. I think it could open the door up. I think these video cards might, to the hardcore collector, to the guy that's been in the hobby for a while, might just seem like another gimmick that's being pushed out the door. But if these card companies really market these well and really get them in the hands of people that haven't collected cards in a long time, and hopefully make them better, just like the iPhone and Androids and all these new digital technologies and laptops and the iPads, the little touch tablets. They're all getting better, and they're all just scratching the surface on how cool they can be if they can keep pushing the envelope with these video cards, because there's a lot of technology that can be packed into that small space. They can make these very powerful little pieces of devices. So they can pack a lot of, they not cheaply. They can't maybe do it as cheaply as they want to. But to really open the door up and to really make them special, special cards and a special experience for people, I think you could do some interesting things there. So I'm excited to see how these video cards play out. But I can understand, as a hardcore collector, I mean, if you're listening to a podcast about cards, chances are you're pretty hardcore about your collecting, you're pretty serious about it. Might just seem like another gimmick, might just seem like something you get, and it's just like, whatever. It's just, I'd rather have the guy's autograph, I'd rather have the guy's jersey. Like I told my brother, I don't want to go look and see what an SPL, I forget what year Tony Romo is, might be 2003. I don't want to see what one of his autograph rookie cards sell for, because I think it's out of 1999 or something. It's out of a decent number. I don't want to, because I think I've sold one for $120, which is only $50 more than what he paid for the video card. So I hope it doesn't sell for just south of $100, because then he could have bought his SP Authentic rookie. But we'll see what happens with the prices of these and with but if they keep making them better, like my brother made the point that, hey, the first jersey cards Upper Deck ever made and the first autograph cards that like came out from, you know, Upper Deck, and I remember the autographics cards from Fleer were like one of the biggest sets of autographs. They were collected in the day and they were expensive cards in the day, but they've really appreciated as time's gone on, especially the autographics. Some of the no-name players still sell. That's like their highest value card, are the on-card autographics. And those jersey cards back, Michael Jordan from the basketball set that had like Michael Jordan, I think like Grant Hill and a couple other, those sell for ridiculous amounts of money because they are the first jersey cards. So my brother made a decent point that, hey, these are the first video cards. If video cards become like the tightest thing ever, the first ones, even if they lack the like souffle that the current ones do, the first video cards will still have some value. So we'll be giving it away. Hopefully that happens. Hopefully to the winner, it goes up or whatever you want to. You could sell, turn around and sell. I don't care. Whatever you do with these giveaways, that's on you. You could sell it. You can open your own, check out my cards and send them all in. I don't really care. It's up to you. But we'll see who wins that one. And that's my take on video cards. After we come back after the short break, we'll do a little bit more talk on like some of the stuff that happened at the summit, some of this minimum advertised pricing, some of the shutting out of like online retailers and kind of going to like the hobby stores and really trying to bring the profits, I think, back to the hobby store. And so we'll talk about that, kind of what kind of all that means to you as the collector, and maybe some of you out there as a potential store owner, a potential business owner, potential business partner in the hobby shop business game. There are some changes. I won't say that they'll get pushed through as quickly and as aggressively as they seem, but maybe they will. So it's something, it definitely, if you're into the business and definitely as a collector, you want to keep an eye on, as they have an effect on prices and all kinds of things going forward. So we'll talk about that, and we'll probably figure out some other stuff to talk about right after this.
It doesn't matter what I say, yeah, as long as I sing with inflection that makes you feel that I'll convey some inner truth or vast reflection. But I've said nothing so far, and I can keep it up for as long as it takes. And it don't matter who you are. If I'm doing my job, it's your is all that breaks. Because the hook brings you back.
And we are back. Time to talk about basically some stuff that's happening in business that is really looking to elevate prices, and even eBay has increased their prices. I think this might already be in effect, but now shipping prices is included in the final value fee. So really you're getting double hit on your shipping now. It used to be that the shipping was only included in your PayPal fee. So if you sold an item for, say, a dollar, and it was like a weird item and you had like $9.99 shipping, you'd only get a dollar final value fee on eBay, but you'd have to pay the $10 commission on PayPal. But now you're paying, now that item to eBay is $10, so you're paying a $10 final value fee for percentage, and you're still paying the $10 percentage over on PayPal. So your fees are going up there. It's really to increase free shipping and low shipping models and stuff like that. But I think in general, guys aren't going to offer stuff at the same price and get dinged for more fees. So they're going to just increase the price and pass it down to you as the collector. I think you'll see more elevated prices on eBay. I think not across the board. We won't say, it's not like every, like gas goes up and it's like, 15 cents here, 10 cents here, and it just all of a sudden ends up at a certain price. But when I say across the board, I would say in general, most people are going to be raising their prices, because at the same time, shipping fees are going up, especially at the low level, especially if you don't use PayPal shipping, which is still discounted, and it's not that big of a change, I don't think, over it was if you use eBay's PayPal shipping feature. You save a lot of money over if you took it to the store, because I think the first 3 ounces on, which is basically like about one card in a really small bubble mailer, is going to run you $1.71, whereas I think it used to be in the $1.30s or $1.40s. So people are going to raise their prices either on shipping, but eBay then countered that with a deal now to where I think, I'm not sure how it is if you have a store, if you sell a lot of things on there, but I'm listing a couple cards for our challenge with Ryan. I'm going to list my Ben Revere. I'm going to list my Yasmani. And they have a new model now. They used to have it to where it had to be auctioned, I think, under 99 cents, and you got to list it for free. But now they have this model where you can list any auction, I think, at any price. So you can start something at $9.99 and then have it end. And if it doesn't get any bids, you're not charged any insertion fees, where I think now anything over 99 cents, it's like 15 cents, 25 cents, something like that, just to list the item, whether it sells or not. So eBay is always changing their little fee structure and how they do things and what kind of things they offer to people that don't have stores and what kind of things they offer to people with stores. So I don't have a store. I don't have anything like that on there. So I think you can list up to 100 or something under that format. So we'll see how it goes. So eBay kind of drops a fee here, but takes another fee here. And if you offer free shipping and then just offer the items at the higher price, it's not really affecting you. The only thing affecting you is the United States Postal Service. First class rates are going up in price. So that might affect you a little bit. But then again, the discount you get using the shipping method through they have on eBay really saves you a lot of money. So I encourage you to use that, especially if you're shipping out. Even if it's only a couple things, you're saving a lot of money there, and usually a lot of times, because if your post office is like mine, the line's out the door. So those are just some things to keep in mind. I know that the shipping fees are already in place, and I know eBay is kind of changing their fee structure. I think it's this week or the following week, so you want to keep an eye on things as well. And if you bought sealed hobby boxes online, especially current stuff, you might have a little more trouble doing that. And we obviously talked about this when we were in Las Vegas, but Upper Deck has like a diamond dealers, only certain people can buy their products and sell it and things like that. And Panini kind of did a similar thing, and they want to make sure that that minimum advertised price on a product is there in place to help protect the hobby stores. So because It's just hard for a hobby store with the overhead of lights and insurance and phones and internet and all the cases and employees potentially and all the stuff. It just costs a whole bunch of money, and we haven't even talked about rent for the lease that you have on your building. And sometimes those are even tied into your sales. It just kind of depends. You know, it's really expensive to run a store, much cheaper than when I was selling boxes in my apartment. I had one cabinet that I could fit all the boxes in, and the UPS guy could, you know, and at that time I was getting UPS rates, USPS rates were really cheap. It was like $4.95 to ship a box, and I could ship mini boxes of 2003 Topps Finest for like, I think under $2, or it was like $1.97 or something like that. It was really cheap. I think when they raised the rate, it went to like $2.15. You could ship them really cheap first class. So it was really cheap for me to do business, and there wasn't any rules. There was so much product on the market that they kind of had to sell online and eBay and stuff like that, but that's really cut down. You can't really buy boxes and stuff as much on eBay as you could in the past, as I think a lot of the sales just went to the big dealers as they built their websites, built reputation. They said, hey, why am I, you know, sending all my fees to eBay when the customers already know who I am and they can just come directly to my website or find me on the internet and things like that. So those kind of things happened, and I think now it kind of really lowered the prices. I think people realized that the prices on boxes were getting to the point where the markup was not even feasible to have a card shop unless you just have incredible foot traffic, unless you have incredible collectors coming through the door. And I know that's part of the job as a card store owner, is to develop collectors and to have a store atmosphere that develops people that want to come in there on a multiple basis. But it's tough. I mean, people don't have all kinds of money to spend on cards and even gas and food and those kind of things these days. So you have to be you know, very privy to that as well. Basically, what's going on at the summit is they're just trying. It's really, the summit really wasn't like the industry summit, because website people like me weren't very, I was like the only one there. I don't think like Blowout Cards and DA Cards World, there was a lot of like negative talk on them and how they're very negative affecting their business. So they weren't really even a part of the discussions. And whether or not that's like really healthy for the business, or really that's really an industry summit to me, kind of is up in the air. It's more of like hobby store owner and anybody that wants to do business with them kind of comes to the summit. I think if we want a true industry summit, we want true ideas to really, and compromises to be made, I think you need to get everybody in the room. You got to get the internet retailer and the hobby store together, even though they have differentiating business ideas and one thinks the other doesn't do it right, then they still need to come to the same room and talk things out and get some compromises, because what ends up happening is you just kind of like shut out Blowout Cards, or you shut out one or the other, and it doesn't really do anything positive for the hobby other than send the wrong message to collectors too. You're kind of just, you know, a collector like me, I've got to drive 30 minutes to a hobby shop. So if I couldn't get a box online from anybody, then I'm, you know, how am I going to get hobby boxes? Thankfully, Panini sends it to us for our website. You know, I'm giving those cards away, but, you know, I couldn't imagine myself buying a couple single cards this year, whether it was for the challenge, setting up a challenge where I was trying to make money on it, or even I bought a Jordan Crawford just for fun, just kind of as my prize, since there's no trophy and I didn't win any money for my fantasy basketball championship. I still want something to remember it by. I still want to be like, oh, I bought this to celebrate. So I couldn't imagine doing that last year. So maybe next year I'm buying boxes of cards just for myself, not to give away, maybe to send to check out my cards, or to flip on eBay to see how I do. I don't really know. But the fact is if I could only get them at a hobby store, I'm getting kind of shut out, because someone like me in California, and like the highest real estate, even though real estate has crashed here, still not cheap. It's still not cheap to own a business. So if at the same time, if the margins to sell boxes is so low, that you literally have to blow it out on eBay or blow it out on your own website for a really razor thin margin and then run a higher price in your store. Because that's really, I talked to one store owner, and I think I talked about this on a previous podcast. He says it's really tough to have a website and a storefront because it's hard to advertise the price online being $5 to $10 higher than everybody else. But that's really what you have to do to compete, because if you have the same price as you do in store on your website, everybody else is going to be $5 to $10 lower. And if you put the prices on your website $5 to $10 lower and your customers go to your website and they say, hey, why the heck am I going into the store and buying it for $80 when I can get on your website and ship it to me for free for $70 if I buy $100 worth of product? So it's a tough thing. It's why hobby stores just can't just open up their own storefront or open up their own eBay store and blow this stuff out, is because they couldn't even compete on price at that point, and they'd be alienating their customers. So you have to pick in this business whether you want to be online or offline. And if you want to be online and offline, you need to have a closer discrepancy with your prices. And so that's kind of what's going on. Plus, these people just have to make a fair living. I think there's some confusion that they want to make these minimum advertising prices like 100% markup, or like these, you know, where if they sell a case, they're going to be able to go lease a new S600 Mercedes. That's not the case. Right now, the markup on boxes is razor thin. We're talking 10% if you're lucky, 5%, especially online. It's not very big. Some of the larger retailers online, they might be able to run a slightly higher margin than that, but there's still some costs associated doing with business, and they're risking a lot because they have to buy large quantities. And trust me, they do take dumps on things. They do buy things at the wholesale price or direct from the companies that collectors hate. Topps Chicle Baseball, for example, last year is selling for $50-$60 or whatever. I don't know. Last time I looked, which was a while ago, it was selling for like 50. It might be selling for a little bit more now, but when I was looking, it was selling for like $50-$60. I think I paid like $80 a box for it. Wholesale, I think it was like in the 70s. So if you're selling it for 60 and you bought it originally, you're just getting hammered. So they do take losses on things, and you just can't do that as a hobby store. You can't buy product and have a, you just don't sell enough to take a loss on a large chunk or even a decent chunk of your product. You do have to be selling things at a consistent profit and be moving them out the door at a good price. So that kind of what it means. Does it mean higher prices for you, for the collector? Probably so. I'm not going to lie. I really truly think it probably will mean higher prices and probably less dumping of product. And what I mean by dumping is, you know, where it goes below the original even wholesale price of a product, and that still happens quite often today, or it gets right down close even after, you know, product sometimes gets hot, and then as it drizzles out and the popularity of it kind of wanes, but there's still a decent amount of that product. Sometimes it starts getting pushed out below wholesale price. So it's really tough to make money in this business, because you have to commit large amounts of money as a hobby store owner to buy 4, 5, 6, 7 cases of this stuff that could potentially be selling for half as much the week later, or 20%, 30% as much the week later. And if that was your only product for the month, and that's all the, you know, that was like your big order and you were hoping to hit it big on that and it didn't work out, it's tough. It's really tough to make money. I mean, you're definitely going to lose money on some of these products. So it's really tough, and I can understand why they want to have at least a minimized advertised price for a while on this stuff to help some of it move out. It obviously help if Panini had rookie classes that were really contagious. It's tough in the NBA. Rookies like Blake Griffin, he was kind of a season. I think 2009-2010 was a really good year. I think Tyreek had one of those years that was really amazing, and Brandon Jennings had a pretty good year. But we're seeing other guys emerge from that year, like Blake Griffin, even Wes Matthews. We'll see him in the playoffs, and a couple other guys from that year. that are pretty darn good basketball players but are still waiting their time. There's still enough veterans and still enough high-priced players in the NBA that these rookies can't get a chance. Now, that could change. Now, you know, not to get too far off topic, but the NBA is trying to get out guaranteed contracts, trying to get out some of this stuff that requires you to keep guys on the roster, and if they're on the roster, you almost have to play them. They're trying to get that out in the NBA, so it would increase more opportunities for younger players and rookies, especially over the course of a season. If a veteran's not playing well or if he's kind of checking out or whatever, you can, you know, get the rookie in there, and you know, it might encourage rookies to even practice even harder because contracts won't be as guaranteed in the NBA as they are now. At least that's what the NBA is trying to do. We'll see if they it ends up working out for them. So but it would help Panini if NBA cards were slightly more collectible, and I'm just talking about Panini here. I know Upper Deck's trying to do pricing, and I'm sure Topps, with the way baseball is, like I said, Topps, Panini has trouble because they don't have LeBron James autographs and they don't have Michael Jordan autographs in basketball. If you had Michael Jordan autographs and LeBron James autographs showing up as much as Kobe's are and Durant's now are and some of these other players like Derrick Rose, Panini basketball products would be selling for a heck of a lot more than they do now, regardless of what the rookies do. But because the Panini products lack the two most premium players that basketball has really seen outside of Kobe in the last, you know, 25 years, it really hurts their products. So they wouldn't have to, I don't think they would even have to talk about minimized advertised pricing if they had those guys in the product. So we'll see how it works out. But it does, I believe this does mean slightly higher prices, not way higher prices for you as the consumer, especially if you're buying your boxes right when they first come out. You're usually paying close to the traditional markup that's accepted in the industry right when they first come out. But I think we'll see less fall off in a product. You know, if the product doesn't sell well or if the rookie class, like this last year NBA rookie class was actually pretty good, but people just didn't get behind it as much. You know, like Greg Monroe is a really good basketball player. I think he's going to have a really solid career for Detroit. I think John Wall, minus some injuries, had a pretty good season. DeMarcus Cousins gets a lot of negative press because he does do some negative things. I don't know. Somebody needs to get this guy like a counselor or something, or just get him on track, because I think he's a tremendous basketball player that can put up big time numbers and is somebody that's probably going to be playing in a much bigger market next year down in Anaheim. So I could see his cards moving. Even Evan Turner and some of these other guys that didn't get huge minutes could still make an impact in year two. So we'll see what happens, but people just didn't get behind the rookies this year because it was really going back to last year and hooking up Blake Griffin cards. So we'll see what happens with this minimized advertising prices. And with Panini, I'm really talking about their basketball because I think really that's the product that's affected the most, because I see the most price fluctuations in basketball where they say, hey, the SRP on Court Kings is 100 or SRP on Crown Royale is 100. And then you consistently see it selling for much less. It's partly due, like we said, there's no Jordan, there's no LeBron, even though we have Kobe now, we have Blake in there who turned himself into a superstar, and we have Kevin Durant, and there's Russell Westbrook, there's Derrick Rose, there's all these, even Dwight Howard's in there, there's all these great basketball players in there, but really, you know, the creme de la creme, LeBron James and Michael Jordan, are still found in Upper Deck. So until that changes, and it might one day, really Michael Jordan would be the big one. And I think, you know, a lot of people either love or hate LeBron, but we'd all love to pull either one of their autographs in a Panini product. So we'll see if that day comes, and maybe with some renegotiation of the labor deals, you never know what kind of things might shake out in the end there. But another thing, my last point on minimum advertising price, people that might be upset with it might think it's a bad thing. It happens absolutely everywhere, almost at, you know, car dealerships selling new cars, even the produce at the produce in the you know, your grocery store, some of that is even subsidized, which is a whole nother thing that sports cards, I guess, could, you know, in a way, sports cards could subsidize hobby store owners a little bit more. And this was an idea, and now we'll kind of go off topic. This was an idea that came up, and I thought it was probably a better idea that didn't get covered as much as it probably should have. Instead of maybe doing minimum advertising pricing, which really kind of, if the collectors catch wind of that, really kind of ticks them off, because then they're saying, hey, there's not a free market on boxes anymore. I'm going to be paying more than I really should. It kind of maybe is negative. Might look at that as negative. Well, what the companies could really do is subsidize the hobby store owner, someone that has a physical store. And people brought this up, that if you bought one case or two case of a product, you got a special box loader, or you got an autographed card of this guy, or you're guaranteed a special card of this, which you could in turn either use as a promotion in store to sell those boxes. So anybody that got a box of that product could then enter to win the, you know, LeBron James autograph card or whatever. Or then you could sell that card online, or sell it in your store, or sell it wherever you wanted to sell it. Sell it to a longtime collector and make them really happy, and maybe give them a really special card at a good price. But in the same time, it subsidizes you buying that case. So say I spend $1,000 buying a 10-box case, but you send me a card that I know I can sell for $150, $200. All of a sudden, now I've knocked off a lot of price on my boxes. Now, don't do that for blowout cards. Don't do that for DA card if they don't have a storefront. Don't do it for Joe Blow that's like me, sitting, not like me anymore, but was like me, sitting in my apartment selling boxes out of my apartment building, having the UPS man come to my door every day. Don't do it for them. Don't make it very strict. Make them a verified hobby store owner. Make them have to go to the industry summit and prove themselves. I don't know what you have to do, but I think that was a really good idea. It does get done every once in a while. I know that they throw box toppers, and they don't do case toppers as much as they used to, but I think box toppers are a good one. But it's better, I think, if it's like a case topper, so the hobby store owner themselves can take that off themselves right off the top, so it doesn't look weird to a customer or anything like that, buying boxes or buying packs from you, that you're taking box loaders off the top and things like that. Put it in the case, give people a case loader, make a special card for hobby store owners, let them sell that off the top or use that as a part of promotions to be able to sell the product that they get. Since they're at a disadvantage, they can't compete on price or even availability some of the time. If you're a hobby store owner and you get a hot product and it sells out and that's it, you can't reorder, you can't get any more, that's it. And these customers are going to go to the online dealer. So you can't even really compete on inventory and things like that unless you're willing to risk huge amounts of money buying product. So those are the kind of things you need to keep in mind. And hopefully the companies think that in mind as well. And I'd like to see them include more incentives to these hobby store owners, to where if they bought boxes from you, or they were on some kind of certain program with you buying boxes through an authorized distributor, hey, send them some special cards, or send them an extra box, or have a set like the Panini had those black boxes, have like a, you know, a card store black, a special one just for the card stores, that you have to go in there to either buy the box from them or buy the single cards that they pull out of there from them, or you have to get online if they're selling them online or whatever. I just think reward the hobby store owner more in those kind of incentives, instead of just saying, hey, let's elevate the price so the margin is, you know, 25, 50% or however big they want it on given prices. I think instead of forcing collectors to pay a certain price, go ahead and let the free market kind of still matriculate and still happen with box prices kind of going up and down, and sometimes going down a little too much, but subsidize it with the hobby store owner. You could even have put things in place. basis. Hey, if the market price goes down to this much, we'll subsidize you with, you know, this much discount on your next order or whatever. Just help them out a little bit more. I could see how I didn't sell enough boxes and packs. I mean, I sold plenty of boxes and packs, but not at the volume and the discount to where I was buying cases and cases of stuff each week. I could see how if you were there as a card store, it'd be tough to know, hey, what to order unless you were in tune and really, you know, if you have employees there, it's tough to get all that lined up. So we'll see what happens going forward with that. But I just wanted to touch on that. Minimum advertising pricing, I think it's something that they're going to try right now, and I think it will probably work to a certain degree, and it'll definitely help, you know, help inflate prices just a little bit. But again, like I'm saying, is these people need to make a, it's not inflating the prices to the point where these people are going to go lease Mercedes-Benz and open up a storefront in the mall and on the other corner, you know, downtown in the same town. It's just going to make them a fair living. A lot of these people were struggling, and if you're at the summit, you would have seen husband and wife there, husband and son and wife, husband with family out in the lobby room. It's hard to, you know, be like, screw this dude. If, you know, since he can't open up online, since he can't compete with online prices, and he doesn't want his customers going to his website and seeing that he's blowing it out $20 cheaper online with free shipping, you know, you got to feel for him. You got to do something for him. I think, you know, elevating prices and selecting select distributors and people that can sell these cards online, I think that's a step in the right direction. But I also think rewarding the hobby shop directly with special cards, special packs, special promotions, getting Kobe to sign up, you know, show up at a card store, getting, you know, Alexander Ovechkin to show up at a card store or whatever, giving them opportunities for that. Or giving them a whole game used jersey of somebody, special things that you can do to reward them for buying your product and selling it and really going to the ground floor and getting face-to-face collectors and selling your product. I think the more you could reward them, the better, and I think the less you'd have to elevate prices somewhat artificially. Although, like we said, minimum advertised pricing happens absolutely in almost every other business. Microsoft won't sell. You can't, you know, buy Microsoft products wholesale and then, you know, try to sell it for a certain price. There's a certain price you have to sell those. There's a certain price you have to sell video games. Talk about a razor thin margin. Video games are like nothing. It's like 10% or less. But there's basically, I mean, you can't sell video games for much lower, but there's everybody sells video games for the same price. And when they go on sale at every single store. So this happens, and, you know, there's a minimum price. You got to sell PS3s. Obviously, you can find deals and coupon codes and things like that. But in general, this happens across all industries. So for it to come to sports cards, or at least them attempting to do this, I don't see it as a shock. I think it's something, as a former owner and a former person that tried to sell boxes, I think it's great for those people, because it's not necessarily just going to give them the instant profits, because if collectors still weren't willing to pay the SRP price, they sure as heck ain't going to pay whatever, you know, price that you're trying to pay. Collectors are always going to pay the price that they think the product is worth to them. So that's still going to happen. That's why I still think you have to subsidize the price in a different way other than just passing it right down to the collector. You've got to subsidize it by giving the hobby store owner or the guy buying the cases and the boxes of this stuff something else as a reward that they can then either sell on the side or use as a promotion that helps them sell this stuff at a higher price because they can't blow it out online for $50 a box with free shipping. So that's my take on that. We'll see what happens there. I'm really, really curious to see. We're just still in the infancy here. We still haven't seen it to work to a full effect. And I'd like to see a full season of it happen, like a full season of football cards, like we're coming up on right now. And it's kind of a perfect segue. We're just going to roll this segment right into our next one, and then we'll cut out of here. Just wanted to get you guys aware. I think you probably already are, but if you can go to sportscardradio.com, you can find our product release checklist or a product release calendar, box release calendar. It's on there on our front page of our website. But there's some pretty good sets. coming out. Hockey Between the Pipes just came out, but I know ITG has another set coming out called Enshrined Hockey that looks really good. There's Contenders Hockey. There's Ultimate Collection Hockey. There's Pinnacle Hockey. There's SB Authentic Hockey. There's tons of hockey. So if you're a hockey collector and you're like, man, I've been kind of on the shelf for a while, or I haven't bought too many new cards, now's the time to get that wallet stacked up and saved up, because there's tons of hockey product coming out. And I can't tell you, you know, too many players from, you know, Enshrined Hockey or SB Authentic Hockey. I just know there's a ton of hockey sets coming out right now, so it'd be great to be a collector of them. Baseball, Gypsy Queen Baseball comes out here pretty soon. At the same time, you want to keep an eye on 2011 Bowman Baseball. Bryce Harper's been doing pretty good in the minor leagues, and I'm sure they'll have autographs, and my brother already has a checklist up. You can go check to see if your favorite prospect that maybe has not had an autograph card does have an autograph card as well. So that's up there. That comes out May 11th, I believe. From Panini and Topps are our officially licensed NFL companies, although I think we've seen some good products from Leaf, and we've seen some good products from Upper Deck, but our first officially NFL licensed product comes May 11th as well. It looks like Panini Prestige Football, so that comes out. Topps has their first one, I think, the following month in June, Topps Rising Rookies Football. But UFC fans, May 4th, you've got Topps UFC title shot. That should be a good one. SB Authentic Basketball comes out here pretty soon, next month. Panini Gold Standard, this is a really interesting set, comes out at the end of next month. This card, if you remember, football has the solid gold ones that are in the BGS cases. I believe, I don't know if they're going to be encased by BGS, but I know that Panini has some nice looking, I think it's their 50th anniversary or something like that. They have these 50th anniversary ones that are going to be solid gold, and they'll probably be encased too. Those are one of one, but they have other sets in here with just like a little gold nugget. Instead of like a jersey piece, there's like a little gold bar. They have like a set called Gold Bars, and I think they have another set that was like celebrating the U.S. Olympic team, and it had little pieces of gold or whatever medal that they won. I think most of the basketball teams won gold except for one. So they have like a little gold in there. So I think you get one gold card per case in there. So that'll be interesting to see if and that kind of comes out right in the heart of basketball season. I'm glad Panini is kind of like, they got Absolute out right now, and they got Classics out right now, and they've got Panini Gold Standard coming out. That's really, you know, this is right when people get pumped up about basketball, especially about the players that are in the playoffs and stuff like that. I think we have a tendency to forget about some of these guys that aren't in the playoffs, and that's sometimes a good buying opportunity. But some of the guys that are in the playoffs, they're on TV, national TV, every single night. So, and their highlights are replayed on TV, and sometimes the national, they get played on national broadcasts, not just ESPN and stuff like that. So big time for the NBA. And so I'm glad to see that we have some good basketball sets coming out this month. And Panini has got a lot of things coming out for hockey. I think Pinnacle Zenith Hockey, Pinnacle Hockey, maybe those are two different sets. I'll have to double check on that. But Leaf Pop Century, we got the Dennis Rodman. I think we're going to give that away, or we gave that away already, and I've got some like Khloe Kardashian cards and some other ones that we're giving away too. So we'll see what happens with there. But I just wanted to give you a heads up. The next 2 months, I think, are pretty good for everything but football. I think we're still a little light on the football until Prestige and Topps Pro Debut comes out. Or not Topps Pro Debut, Topps Rookie Rising comes out. But as we get into the further months, we'll see better football, and hopefully they get it worked out. I think as somebody that's old enough to see the league, I remember when I was a kid, and I remember the leagues would strike. I remember the NBA had that like 50-game season, and there was a couple other times where like the MLB striked right when the Giants were doing heck of good. And I was thinking, man, this sucks, you know, are they ever going to play again? Well, they're definitely going to play again. And I think now these days, the money's even bigger. And these guys are not, they're pretty stupid, both the players and the owners of all the teams, the baseball and football and basketball. All these leagues are filled with idiot players and idiot owners. But they'll figure it out because they're all they're all cheap too. They all have a lot of money, but they're also very cheap. And so they don't want to see, a couple $1 billion just go down the drain for a year. So they need to pay bills as well. They need, they have expenses themselves they need to pay. So they'll get to work. The players just want to skip training camps and the OTAs and all that. Trust me, they're loving life right now. They hate these. I know, especially the veteran players hate the OTAs, hate the all that crap that they got to do before the season starts. So they're just trying to ride this all the way out into August. So right, week or two before the games are really supposed to start, they'll hammer it out. It'll all get worked out, and they'll start playing football. As scheduled. People will be a little out of shape. The games might be a little sloppy in the beginning, but it's not like the games aren't sloppy anyways in the NFL. I always see guys fumbling and bumbling anyways, so it won't be much different. So the refs will be a little rusty too. So we'll see what happens. I think basketball will get theirs worked out. Hopefully they do, because if they don't, means our cards are in the tubes, folks. Now, not necessarily, but football would take a huge hit if they don't play football, or if they really lose a large part of the season, or if they have to make big changes to a season. It will probably take a little bit of a hit, but we'll see. I think they'll get it worked out. But for now, we'll be watching basketball playoffs and baseball playoffs, as or baseball's regular season as well. Hopefully your teams are doing good. Hopefully your prospects are doing good. Head on over to minorleaguebaseball.com. This is a totally, they don't pay me to say this, but I registered over there. It's just like a really like simple register or whatever, but it allows you to like bookmark a player. You might not even have to be registered, but I registered and I bookmark players, and so I can go back to the guys that I have cards of or the guys I'm keeping eyes on. I can go back there every other day or every day if I want and check on their stats really quickly without having to type in their names. I think that's a pretty cool feature. If you collect cards and things like that, you'll want to bookmark players on the Minor League Baseball site so you can check their updated stats, see how your guy's doing. I've noticed that players that I sold, I had a James Darnell that I sold a little too soon. I sold his autograph for like $2 or something, and they're selling for like $6-7 now. And it's because he's tearing it up. He's tearing it up in Double A. So people watch these stats. It does help guys' cards go up and down. I noticed I had one pitcher. He pitched horrible in his first outing. I think he only went like an inning and a half, and he gave up like 6 or 7. I mean, absolutely got lit up in his first outing, and his cards did go. I noticed like his cards on Check Out My Cards definitely went down. So people definitely watch this stuff, and it's worth it to you if you're into prospecting. It is kind of fun if you're into prospecting and things like that. You should get on there. I know I got a lot more free time. I'm not going to be playing poker anymore. If you're an online poker player and you haven't heard, no more Poker Stars, no more Full Tilt, no more Ultimate Bet or Absolute Poker, folks. It's Armageddon. It was Black Friday yesterday. It was the end of 9/11 for poker players. So I'm not going to be playing any more online poker for at least probably a year, 2 years, maybe even longer than that, unless California gets something worked out here, or one of the other states gets something worked out, but we'll see. So I'm going to just be putting all my money into the stocks and all my money into the cards. Good enough for about $20-$30 each month. So hopefully you can do the same. That about wraps it up today. On our next show, I'll have an interview. I'm not exactly sure who it's going to be from. I got to figure out. Like I said, I've got 5 or 6 that I've got good contacts for, and I'll just get the one his schedule lines up. So we'll have something fun to look forward to on our next program. Hopefully everything's going for you. Good luck with your collections, everybody. We are out of here.